Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
A welcome to the path forward. It is, wow, it's already November 18th. Where'd the month go? I'll be joined today here in a second by TL and Pete from Western Shooters. And we're going to be talking about their documentary. Some admin notes. I still have coins to send out. My apologies for not sending those out. For all the paid subscribers on Substack, I'm sending coins for all the paid subscribers as a thank you for supporting the channel. It really does help, believe it or not. It offsets the cost of all the software that you got to buy and all licensing and the t-shirts and all the rest of that. So I appreciate the support. The t-shirts and all of the Substack links are all in the show notes. If you go out to Spreadshirt and you have an issue with an order, so I had somebody reached out to me this week because they had an issue with either a shirt or a sweatshirt. If you have any issues, let me know because I have a direct contact with Spreadshirt, and they're really good about making things right. When I first started this, one of the images got corrupted during upload, and so it came out pixelated to like 30 people. There was like 40 shirts that went out overnight, and they made it right. They sent out new shirts. We corrected the image file for the logo for One Team, One Fight, and they made it right and sent out new shirts to everybody. So I've stuck with them because of that, and it's, you know, I don't make any money off the shirts, to be honest. There's more of a cost to it than anything else, but it's about spreading the word. So I know I'm wearing the Ford shirt today. I've been cleaning it all day, so it's been one of those days. But without further ado, let me bring on Pete and TL. Gents, thanks for jumping on today. I really appreciate you guys taking the time. I know this was a bit to schedule, so I appreciate you guys making the time. I'll just let you guys introduce yourselves and talk through how you got into Western Shooters, how it developed, et cetera. I'll just let you go.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. I'll just take a couple minutes to do some backgrounding on Western Rifle Shooters and all that. I came out of a big city district attorney's office in 1994, and pretty embittered. I've worked on big cases, made big cases. There's a picture of me somewhere in a C-130 with 1,000 keys of coke and 5 kilos of heroin. But that stash also got informant killed by personnel, I'll call them, just in the federal government. Cover your imposter or your resource by killing someone else's. That's a pretty bitter way to end a job. I went into corporate America, was becoming more and more concerned about the way the country was going. It's the second half of the 90s. And I started to read some material that would be considered bad material in places like the UK. But I and a few other people put together something called the Western Rifle Shooters Association, because we had been with another organization and we wanted to have this kind of the cadence and the sound. But that was about in 2002, 2003. And a lot of good work has gone in by a lot of people, most of whom rightfully stay honest and anonymous. And we're about freedom. You want the whole purpose of WRSA. It's about freedom and making it grow rather than letting it die. And with that, I'll throw it over to my colleague, Mr. Davis.
Yeah, well, I got started probably in the late 80s, having to do just with the same thing, freedom, you know, where I studied a lot myself on just, you know, political theory and such, and stayed active, but I was mostly, while I was working oil field and stuff like that, I was working on a writing career and was writing short stories, novels, stuff like that. And so I was always online, you know, from like the first start of it. And then we started doing things, you know, the blogs probably, you know, 2008, something like that. And it just kind of rolled into that being one of the mainstays, is being able to express my political activism, you know, online. And that put me eventually in touch with Pete, and that.
How did you guys
sort of
meet?
Cemented a role for me in doing what I do.
So. Yeah, how did you guys meet? I mean, how did you connect?
Well, I had come up with this idea. It was kind of a borrowed idea from something I'd been involved with that got the IRS crawling up my business, literally my business. They decided it's easy to come after an independent businessman because you can always go after them for not paying their taxes somewhere, you know, even though I always did. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's true or not. They just go after it because it's easy pickings, you know. I had decided to do something called the Siege on DC, which was just literally sort of an organization that would be able to take people, encourage them to come to DC and go to the offices of the representatives and put a face to, you know, I mean, you could write all the emails you want, but if you show up at their office, and I saw this on the thing that I attended before, if you show up at their office, it rattles them big time. They don't know what to do. They hide from you. The actual representative won't come back to their office as long as you're there. And I sat there for like 6 hours one day waiting, you know. The idea is show up and cause them concern. And so I had this whole thing designed, and thousands of people had responded and expressed interest. And then the little inside, you know, Conservativism Inc. got involved in it and started spreading a lot of doubt about who I was and what I was doing. And I was crazy and it never happened and none of this. And, you know, I got tailed around D.C. by these creeps, these federal thugs. And
I was going to say, you sure wasn't the FBI?
What's that?
You sure wasn't the FBI? That seems to be
there. Oh, yeah. FBI, all kinds of them. You know, I don't know. I guess they were running a training op on me or something because they were pretty lousy. I could pick them out pretty easy. One of the things you can do if you're wondering if you're being tailed is walk along and then just do a 180. And they get a shocked look on their face, a panicked look on their face, the guy who's following you. That's how you can tell. Anyway, so it was in moving in D.C. That's why I met Pete. Pete came out to see how horribly this was going to crash and burn. And he was there to witness the flames. And I mean, Conservatism Inc. just literally ripped it apart. You know, spread enough doubt and fear that nobody showed up but Pete and one other individual. That was it. Two guys out of thousands, right? Because somebody, some big site picked it up. I don't remember who it was, but they were huge. And that minute, my email exploded with all these people and everything. And slowly, nobody. And that was my first lesson in how the system really works, and you know how interested they are in intimidating you, and all that did was just make me double down, because if that's the lengths to which you're willing to go, I'll go one step further with you, you know. So that's how we met. He was one of the ones who just showed up to see, okay, now after this clown gets his lesson, then we can maybe talk. That was sort of the impression I had of Pete when I first met him. So.
I hope I didn't say any of those things. It was quite a while ago.
Yeah, it was on your face, Pete. I saw it.
Oh, yeah, well, I didn't wear my mask that day.
So you guys started Western Shooter. How did Western Shooters come about?
No, that's all Pete's. That's not I'm not even really a part of it.
Oh yes, you are. You're always posted there. I mean, and have been.
Well, yeah. I mean, but officially, technically, I'm not. I don't have any secret password or anything. I
just... Exactly. It's stomped two times with your left foot, by the way. Western Rifle Shooters was just an outgrowth of something that a gentleman in North Carolina put together in the late '90s, early aughts. Dedicated to improving the rifle marksmanship of Americans. He had access to a really great 500 yard range in central North Carolina. He was a gun dealer himself, and an M14 dealer. So there was this, you know, the magical world of the M14.
I have an M1A. I have an M1. I can't help it.
it's a nice rig. I started to think what I used to have and what I still have, but I had the I won't even say audacity. I just had the good idea that instead of being upset over there being only 10 or 15 people at last week's shoot, why don't we go to them? Why don't we go out on the road? And he said, I don't want to go out the road, and I got family stuff. I said, I'll do it. Because I have some judgment concerns at times. I'll just put it that way. And what I did during that that year of 2003 is I put a lot of time and mileage into the brand new pickup truck that I had, and I went to a lot of places, shook a lot of hands, was part of a number of shoots all over the country, and it was all done within the within the auspices of what did the Revolutionary War people do when it was time for them to get more proficient with their weapons, and how can we mirror that? And very low key in the America that I still believed in back then. You know, and there was, like in any organization, there's always going to be tips and all that kind of stuff. And Western Rifle Shooters was just a spinoff. Rather than throwing rocks at each other, take your stuff and go to your place, and I'll take my stuff and go to my place, and good luck to you and God be with you, kind of thing. And that's really where it started in, you know, 2006 is when the wheels fell off the RWVA thing, and the WRSA thing came up. And then as we ran up to the problems with that any small business has, there's a lot more demand often than there is supply and expense covering and all that, and it just became more even before the government really started to crack down on things all around the country. You know, there was too much money going out and not enough coming back in as entry fees. So it became a longstanding blog. I don't know how many times I've been knocked off the web, but it keeps coming back because I keep finding people smart enough with IT and brave enough, courageous enough, historically related enough to help me out. So that's the WRSA story.
So let's move to the documentary, because that's what we're really here for.
Exactly.
I want to hear about that. So but tell me about that. How did that come about? What is that? What's it about?
I'm going to go to my colleague because he's the writer.
Well, first of all, we did, and Matt Bracken was part of this as well, and a number of great freedom fighters, if you look at it. I mean, they put their lives out there all the time just to promulgate the message that we aren't free and we should be, and we need to strive toward that if however we can. And so we did Lives of Omission to begin with. And that now it's on Tubi and all kinds of different places. Tubi is the best place to watch it because they have sort of the updated version. So having done the update in 2021, I guess I hadn't really thought about doing a documentary, but you know, the world just keeps getting worse and worse, and there's just more to address all the time. And so we were talking about, should we do another one? And I said, well, if we do this one, then we have to do something about building an infrastructure for conservative documentaries, because everything is in place for a conservative documentary except the funding, you know? And so that was one of the links that we wanted to build. The first one we did on personal funds of mine and Pete's and some crowdfunding sort of things where a lot of people wanted to take part in it. And we opened that up to them, and they provided a good bit of the funding for the first one, but we didn't really want to do that this time. So funding has been an issue, but it came about, we thought, man, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening, and it just seems like, you know, I had hoped that once Trump got in that they would resolve that Ukraine nonsense. And then they really didn't. And all that did was just pit us against Russia. And I don't know about anybody else, but I'm not real enthused about the military weapons systems that we have right now. I mean, on at least I'm an old Air Force guy, so what I've seen of our Air Force capabilities versus the 21st century warfare, which is done with drones and other things, that this looked like it was going to get out of hand and it still probably can. But at the time, we just started looking at what are the big issues. And for us, immigration was a big issue. And sovereignty is a big issue. And these big international organizations moving a lot of immigration and stuff and the NGOs and all that. And we said, well, look, we just feel like we need to illuminate that for people so that they can see it as more of a cohesive whole rather than a bunch of random things that are happening. I mean, illegal immigration is tied into the NGOs and the international organizations taking control of whole blocks of nations, either through the UN or the EU. And those who are fighting back against it need to be given a little sunshine as to what they're doing, because what they're doing in Hungary and Poland and Slovakia and the Czech Republic, or Chechnya, or however you want to say it, but the Czech Republic, that's all important. Those are the new allies of the U.S. and France and Germany and the U.K. are becoming the Middle East. So how can they then be our allies if they're going to join the Middle Eastern bloc, at least ideologically and intellectually? So that's what the film Deconstruction is about. It's about deconstructing these things that have been put in place since the international rules-based order at the end of World War II. They've all corroded and corrupted to the point that they basically need to be deconstructed, what value there is extracted and maybe propped up, but about 90% of it needs to go in the trash can. And so we attempted to illuminate the American audience as to the rising new block of allies that we need to embrace. And that's the gist of it.
How long, and everybody can find it on Tubi. If you send me the link for it, I will post it in the show notes so people can find it.
Okay, yeah, you can find Lives of Omission on Tubi at this point. But We're still working on the deconstruction. We've got a few.
Yeah, we're still elbow deep on that, but getting closer to the end as we work. And I would recommend that folks who haven't watched Lies of Omission before to go to that Tubi site and watch it. Really great people there. Bracken, Claire Wolfe, David Kodria, the late Mike Vandebo, whom I leave it
Larry
out.
Pratt.
Larry Pratt, yeah. It was kind of a children's crusade in terms of the amount of, you know, wherewithal we had. But because of the work that was done by both our writer and our director and editors, we have a really good piece of circa 2016 America. And I think there's probably a way to tie the two together, because here we are 10 years later. And most of the bad things that people were talking about in Lies have been superseded by really bad things, and the potential of really bad things here as we go into the 250th year of our country's birth. And I think everybody should watch, everybody interested in this whole subject should watch the 21 edition of Lies of Omission, because it's done really well. And like I say, we've lost a number of people, and even people that are still alive, they've dropped off because they don't want to have the last years of their life be caught up in the governmental nonsense that has been going on pretty much since the Whiskey Rebellion. So, and with that.
I think, so how soon do you think the new documentary is going to come out?
It's probably within 6 months.
Okay. We're going to try.
To where it has a theater run, just because you're going to have to be able to. That's the whole idea of doing this one this way, was to have a theater run, and see where it goes from there, and then before we get into streamers.
You know, that's a tough go these days with the theater thing. I don't know about you guys, but I haven't been to a movie theater in probably easy 10 years. Easy. Yeah. So, and I think that you got to do the run just to do it, just to get the PR out there for it. Cause it's interesting how movie theaters, they're still out there. They're still alive. And you still got to do the PR circuit for the theaters before you stream, just to get people aware that it's actually coming out. Otherwise it goes to stream and it just shows up in a feed on Amazon or Netflix or whatever. And, you know, it may or may not get hits on it. Right.
So. Yeah. Without a theater run and the hype around that and everything, you go onto the streaming platforms and you just get buried.
Yeah.
You know, that's one reason why I always promote the Tubi TV version. Cause not only is it the 2021 version, but it also if you go onto Tubi and you put in Lies of, it'll pop up. If you go into almost every other place that it streams, you have to put the whole thing and then maybe tag it to the director or some.
Did we freeze?
I'm good. I think TL is frozen.
That is the story of my life. It's not a show without 30 minutes of cursory IT setup, just so you guys know.
Okay. All right.
That's just how the game's played. So,
the theater run's important, because then if you have a decent theater run, even for a documentary, if you have a decent theater run, then they'll rank that higher in the streaming services, so that you'll be able to find it without, you know, you should be able to go on there and hit, you know, documentaries. And if you have a good enough theater run, then yours will pop up. Otherwise, you know, it's 50 pages down and you really have to be looking for it to find it.
Yeah. These days I don't trust anything from being shadow banned or throttled. I mean, they throttle the shit out of Rumble. I'll just give you a key. What's interesting about Rumble is it doesn't reach a lot of people don't even know what it is. That's the first problem. Second problem is they throttle everybody that has a conservative message. And it's interesting because I stream to RSS too, which streams to Apple, which streams to Spotify, which streams to probably 15 different platforms. I have people all over the world that listen to me. In fact, I'd still kind of cracks me up. My biggest platform, Apple Podcasts. Now, who would have thought that Apple Podcasts would be my biggest platform on an Apple phone? But it is, right? And I get probably 1,000 downloads per show per day. And typically it trails off after about 7 days. So I get like 7,000-8,000 views or downloads in the first week, and then drops down to like 600, then it drops down to 400. And every so often after that, I'll get 200 or 300 spikes, people going back and re-listening to shows. But I don't trust any of these platforms not to throttle anything that's conservative. That's just how they work. Yeah. So I was just doing a search on Tubi, and I don't see it in the first 10. But I'm not logged in. So,
I was going to say, if you go into the search box and put Lies Of, it should pop up.
I'm searching. I put it to the test because,
that's
Lies Of Omission number 2.
Yeah.
The second
usually it's right in there because people go to it, but we haven't really been promoting it lately because we're so busy with this new one, with deconstruction. And that's my fault, 'cause I'm kind of in charge of that, but I don't, you know,
it's a big movie done by not very many people. And I'll be happy to have that carved in my grave. I think it's also going to be interesting to see how the European audience, because a number of the folks that appear in significant amounts in the film are Europeans. And whether it's a small take or a longer exposition, I think it's good that Americans see that. I think it will be even better for Europeans to see that, because they know that the Americans haven't lost yet. And I think that's one of the things that this film will do when it's showing, not just here in the States or North America, but over in Europe as well. Because, you know, I am confident to your point about, you know, all the manipulation that the governments and non-government operators are doing to content. You know, you have to ask yourself, what do the Europeans actually get to hear on at least the normal social networks? My guess is anything that is just potentially problematic, which is one of their favorite words, you get knocked off. And today on Zero Hedge, I saw a piece about the Brits putting, I think, 30,000 people, bringing criminal charges against 30,000 people in the UK for, bad talking on the internet. And, Orwell was an optimist, and I used to think that was just how cute. I understand it completely now, because that is what is coming. That is what is here in some paths, some ways. And that's what this movie is about, is to say no. You know, as we each opened up without planning with the idea of freedom, it's about freedom. And there's a wonderful quote in there, and I'm going to hold back so that you have to look for it or listen to it. It's a wonderful wonderful statement made by Orban about the importance of freedom. you know, this guy that was held out by the BBC and DW and all France 24, all the biggies, as, you know, a bad guy and a terrible person and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, they mobilized all assets against Orban. I mean,
exactly.
They have mobilized everything. Just like, I don't know if you've been paying attention to Twitter lately, but they've mobilized every asset against, you know, Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes, Candace Owens. I mean, it's literally, you could just go down your feed and every other post is something about how, you know, Ben Shapiro is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And you can see the bots being pushed, right? So
yeah,
I think you're right. Number one, it is here to stay. Number two, hopefully this will wake people up and give people some, because it's what the entire conservative, I don't want to say movement, because it's really not what it is. But what most conservatives right now need is a call to action, right? This is how we fight this. Right. And, you know, I've said before that this is not a kinetic fight. We've been in an information war for the past 15 to 20 years, and people don't realize it. And that information war, there's a lot of ways we can bring this government to its knees without having to fire one shot. You take this country full stop, you stop rolling trucks, you stop rolling trains, you stop rolling aircraft, I guarantee it'll get their attention and it will stop overnight. And the longer it goes, 2-3 days, and companies will start rolling up. So hopefully this will be a call to action for people. At least that's my hope for it. So,
well, one of the connections we made, which was important to us, was in 1956 in Hungary, and this is one reason why we focus on Hungary and Poland, but largely Hungary. In 1956, they had a revolution, sort of. It was kind of a rebellion. And they rebelled against having, you know, Soviet troops there since the end of the war, Soviet governments, you know, designed. Basically, there was the Soviets were running Hungary with Hungarian people, but big communists. And in 56, it just sort of grew out of this student sort of revolution, where they weren't asking to not be communist, even really. They were just asking for a little more leniency, or a little, you know, let some reforms take place, and you know, support the farmers that were being killed by these restrictions. That's all they were really looking for, but it went too far, and they sort of took over, and then, you know, the Russians came in and quashed it. But for those 5 or 7 days or whatever it was, they actually felt a taste of freedom. And it was, you know, several years after that. But part of what this film connects to is, look, everything that they were rebelling against in 1956, you're suffering right now. I mean, they don't, one of the statements in there is they don't use the KGB or the Stasi or the ABO men, which is what the Hungarian secret police were, because they don't have to. They're in your phone. It's in your Siri. It's in everywhere. It's you're under total surveillance all of the time. And when you let them weaponize that, you're done. And that's exactly what they're doing with the digital IDs and stuff like that. Is that's how they weaponize what they know about you and where you are and who you are and who you talk to. And so, I mean, they're able to do it anyway, but that's like the big thing. So what we were drawn on is saying, look, this is a level of freedom that they found intolerable. And you even had children as young as 10 years old out there fighting for this concept of freedom that seems to get such short shrift today. I mean, as I've explained a number of times, you know, I grew up in a total state of freedom until I was like, you know, 15 years old, and then realized, hold it, there's actual, you know, there are some things that you can't do, even though you're obeying all of the basic golden rule, which is, you know, you do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, right? As long as you're obeying that, you shouldn't be in any kind of trouble. But I was probably 15 before I realized, hold it, you can get in trouble even though you're not hurting anybody or breaking anything or doing anything wrong. It can just be against the law. And I thought, holy crap, I didn't know that. I thought it was. And so that's, I'm always extremely jealous then of my freedom. And that's somewhat the same concept in Hungary. They've already lived under. In fact, when you look at this new block being created by these different countries and the electorate, you realize that those are all the countries that had been occupied by the Soviet Union. They know what no freedom is. And the people in Western Europe have no clue what a lack of freedom is. And so they've let all of these things happen. But the Central and Eastern countries in Europe know what that was, and they're not willing to go back.
I don't blame them, do you?
No, I think that's the rally cry. And in the U.S., we're in the same point. But that's why in the film, we drew that parallel to this is what is worth fighting for, and this is what they did in Hungary, even facing the overwhelming, massive army of the Soviet Union. They still took that chance, that possibility, that prospect of freedom, and rose up. Even these children took part in it. And so then you kind of look at yourself and you go, maybe there's something we need to do to fight back against the restrictions that we're seeing get more draconian every day. So.
And that's one of the things that excites me the most about the totality of the film is we've got, correct me if I'm wrong, three separate people, Hungarians, who were there, who were very young adults, because I'm going to call them adults even at 10 if they're going out and running from machine guns and running toward the tanks, which is what they were doing. And to have those memories and those ideas captured by a small American documentary group and made available to the world is a big thing, because as TL mentioned, you know, this is the upcoming 70th anniversary of the revolution in Hungary, just like it is the 250th for us on July 4th. And there's a lot of commonality there between what people, how much more are people willing to take, regardless of what your language is or any of that. What is enough? And I think that's one of the questions that.
Well, it's what's your line in the sand, right? What's your line in the sand that's going to make you pick up arms? And I'm always amazed because, first of all, I got out of the prediction business and the whole idea right. of making predictions because I was wildly inaccurate based on what I was seeing. But I thought in October, November of 24, everybody I know was gearing up for a civil war. They were gearing up to go after the government if they stole this last election. Everybody took a breath because Trump got elected thinking that, okay, we're going to see some accountability. But you can see right now the animus building again because people are angry and they don't. I'll be surprised if we make it to 28 without some kind of civil unrest. But again, I could be surprised because what I think people aren't going to tolerate, they tolerate. And I would thought people in the blue states right now that are getting taxed out of, getting taxed into oblivion, I figured they would have picked up arms already because Washington State just passed one of the biggest tax packages in the history of the state. They have a constitutional amendment that says the state won't do state income tax. They're going to repeal that, and they're going to do state income tax on top of the taxation they're already pushing on people. It's okay. Yeah, I guess it's fine because people don't get upset about it. It's what point do people, when does that, they cross the line in the sand? And I would say it's when they're so they're unable to feed their kids, go to work, and pay their mortgage. I think that's when people are going to finally lose their shit. But by then they'll have the control grid in place, or at least enough of it. The piece that I don't think is feasible is the AI side of this. I don't think they have enough power to do it.
No, they don't.
That said, they'll put some version of it in place. And as far as I'm concerned, they've already done it with digital ID. Like they have digital ID here in Arizona. They have real ID, which, you know, they say it's to identify illegals. No, it's not. And Kristi Noem's about as smart as a sack of rusty hammers. So I don't trust her to do the right thing. So we're seeing them implement it right now, slowly but surely. And it's voluntary to start with, but give it 2 years and it'll be mandatory, and then they'll be screwing all of us. So at some point people will pick up arms. I'm really curious to see what that line in the sand's going to be, because I think I'll still be alive for it, to be honest with you.
Where I see that line, honestly, is tied, as you said, to AI, because the amount of power that it takes to run it and the amount of water it takes to cool it puts people in a situation where they're not going to be able to afford to live with the electricity that they do today. Once you start putting, and they're just building these data centers, AI data centers everywhere that they can, but they're not taking into account the fact that the water that they need to use is the water we need to drink.
They don't care. They don't care.
I know they don't care, but that's the point at which they cross over to where I believe, and this is not a prediction, because kind of like you, I had no concept that the American citizen would put up with the nonsense that we seem to put up with. But in my view, anyway, it's the push for AI, the demand for the electricity, and the demand for the water that leaves everybody without the power that they want to be able to power their homes and the water that they need to drink that is unavailable. So we'll see, but.
And I'll jump in and throw my particular chip on the table, which is as a former New York City guy, seeing what's going to be installed on January 1st is almost unbelievable, but there it is. And there has been this growing Muslim expansion across the entire country. There is a point where just by matter of weight, the rules of Islam do not permit the freedoms listed in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights and in the Declaration of Independence. And that's another element here that I don't know how long it's going to take, but I know that it's closer to the flashpoint than the initial spark.
I think by 2030, people are going to have. So right now, there's three things. I see three things reaching that culmination point. And I think it'll be by 2030 for a couple of reasons. One, you're seeing more identification of the fact that they're building mosques throughout Texas and throughout other red states. That's on purpose, right? That's on purpose. Yes. And then they come in and they start flexing their muscle. They start threatening people. This time when they do that, they're at some point that will turn into gunfire. And that problem will solve itself. Because I don't see, Michigan is not a bellwether for the rest of the country. Michigan is full of, you know, all kinds of liberals. But the fact that they have called a prayer in Michigan City right now and everybody's okay with it, the fact that they change the Minnesota flag to the Somali flag, at some point that's gonna pendulum's gonna swing the other way, right? but that's going to, there's going to be a lot of bloodshed for that to happen. And I, again, it's that decisive moment that people haven't reached where they realize that breaking the law is less painful than dealing with the era, the, you know, the whole Muslim culture. And it, they don't bring anything to the, they don't bring anything to the country, especially if they're from outside the country, that benefits the U.S., right? What they're, what, and look, I need to qualify this before I say this so people understand what I'm trying to say. I've worked with the Islamic Council of America, and back in 2004, 2005, I worked, there was, the gal I worked with was Iranian, and she helped me get humanitarian assistance into Iraq when nothing else was moving. And court State Department came in and screwed that up. But the point is, we've had Muslims in this country for a very long time. What we haven't had and what we've imported over the last 5 years are all the extremists. And that's what's coming in, Muslim Brotherhood, the Al-Qaeda guys. That's who's coming in. That's where a lot of this is being centered. And a lot of it's coming out of Qatar. A lot of the Muslim Brotherhood, but in fact, Muslim Brotherhood headquarters is right there in Qatar. I don't know why we have a base there and we haven't gone after them and taken them out. But again, it's that culmination point's going to happen in two ways. And then the other side of the fence is going to be, we'll see legislation that limits the number of mosques within a city or a county or a state. We'll see that come up first, and then we'll see the kinetic after that. At least that's how I see it developing, because they're already talking about legislation to limit or ban the Muslim mosques within certain cities or city limits, et cetera. So we'll see more of that. But again, you know, they've moved into small towns. They've used the Maoist marketing philosophy, where you move into all the peripherals and the towns where there's not a lot of population, you take over, you import population, you take the key leadership roles, and then you start to branch out from there. And that's exactly what they've done in Texas, because there's parts of Texas that maybe have 1,000 residents, and all of a sudden you have all these new residents, and then next thing you know, you've got a mosque, then the city manager is a Muslim. Yeah, it's a strategy that's being played out by Muslim Brotherhood. And the person I blame the most for this, John Brennan. He's the one that started this movement. He's the one that helped the first group of Somalis come over, he and Barack Obama. And if they are not held accountable for treason, Trump will be the most despised man in American history. Because what they've done to this country, and it's not just Obamacare, all the theater and everything around that, that was all just nonsense. I'm talking about the treason these guys committed by bringing in these foreign nationals and purposely setting them in place to deconstruct red states, swing states, and the Constitution. That's what I'm talking about.
Well said.
So
I saw it happen in my hometown in Port Morgan, Colorado. They brought, when that was where I was, grew up, we got a place out there, and they brought in all these Somalis to work at the beet plant. And overnight you had in a town of probably about 10,000 people, about 2,000 of them were Somalis, and it changed everything. But I wasn't living there at the time, but I would just notice it when I drove downtown, there was a lot of Somalis walking along. I don't know to what degree it politically it had an impact, because I didn't live there, but it was something that was noticeable, and that was under Obama. So
yep, he's the one that started most. And
well, fortunately Texas Abbott has signed a declaration of some sort that the Muslim Brotherhood and CARE are terrorist organizations. But unless you go in and confiscate their property and bulldoze the mosques,
yep,
it doesn't mean anything. This is what I fear the most is the politicians who make these grandiose statements, but what is there behind it? You know, how does you know, do you actually do anything about it then? And my feeling is no, because I've watched Abbott for enough years to know that there's no there, you know, there's talk and there's what he has to do politically to survive, but nothing past that.
Well, yeah. I mean, just Michael Yon did a really good, it was a bunch of articles, a bunch of interviews. He was actually on the ground. I mean, he did a great job outlining how Abbott has done absolutely nothing. It's zero. All just been zero. Words and declarations that mean nothing while he's handing the state over to, you know, illegals, the port of entries to allow human trafficking. I mean, the guy's just a piece of work.
Oh yeah. Well, the state has paid somewhere around $100 million to support these Islamic organizations that are building mosques.
Make that make sense.
Yeah. Well, you
drive your head into the wall.
It's very simple. They're on the opposite team.
And yeah, clearly. We have a word for that. It's called treason.
It's called treason. And they're all guilty. Every single one of them.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw today, but did you see that Mark Kelly and a bunch of other senators are openly telling people to not do their duty, specifically service members? I think that's called sedition.
Fight Trump from inside by refusing to obey his orders. Simple as that.
I find that incredible, to be perfectly honest with you. That's incredible.
It's an indicator of how far down the path to open hostility to the United States of America the leftists, the Democrats have gone. And you take the Democrats and then you take another half of the Republicans and put them in the Democrats' side, and you realize what a monumental task it will be to survive in any sense as the United States that I grew up in, at least in my protected little rural area. I was allowed to believe that the U.S. was still the U.S. Now you can't even argue that, I don't think. I don't think you can argue that what we experience every day has any relation whatsoever to the founding documents or the conceived of belief of what sort of nation you lived in.
It's amazing to me how far down we've swirled in the bowl just since we went to Iraq. I mean, yeah. I was watching, I've been watching reruns of Friends on Amazon, and you couldn't make a show like that right now with all the sexual innuendo and all of the toxic masculinity. That's another bullshit term. But it cracks me up at that, you know, I'm watching these old reruns and I'm thinking you could never make this show right now because it would just get flamed out of existence after the first episode. Because social media, and it's purposely designed to do it too. It gives all these snowflakes with nothing better to do than to piss and moan about something, a platform to do that. And you got to give the left credit because they march in lockstep. You know, the conservatives, we fight each other because everybody's got to be in control. Everybody's got to be right. But the left, they march in lockstep. It's amazing to watch because social media, they all have the same viewpoint, right? Mango emperor bad, orange man bad. It's amazing to me just how the mind virus has infected this country to the point now where things have to get so bad. And I don't think the Epstein stuff is going to do it, right? I until they come out with the snuff tapes from the Epstein and all the other stuff he was doing, people aren't going to realize how badly they've been duped. But I'm waiting for that aha moment when the left realizes, oh, they've lied to us about everything. And I'm just waiting for it. But the problem is the extreme left has the platform and the extreme left is driving the bus, and there's nobody in the center that's saying, wait a second, you freak shows, you go over here, go hump each other and beat each other with ball peen hammers and blow your cat, but don't control the platform. And it's gone the opposite way, right? I think Mandami is he's an experiment in how fast can we get this guy out of office because he's not an American citizen. And we'll see if the FBI and the Southern District of New York are actually worth their salt. I don't think so.
Yeah.
But, you know, the guy's not a U.S. citizen, and I'm waiting to see him, you know, get rolled up for, you know, falsifying documents or fraud or whatever the case is going to be. But, yeah, I keep getting told by people in the system, oh, that's going to be short-lived. All right. Yeah, just like
the arrest would come in. Yeah, those are the people that believe in Pam Bondi, too.
Yeah.
She's not an AG. She is, but she isn't. And that's the problem. You've got California lost, even though there are large pieces of it that are still intact for now. You've got New York, downstate New York, in deep, deep, deep trouble. And Washington, Michigan, Oregon, Texas. It's uglier than most people can bear to look at, not folks on this show, but others. And I think, as much as I hate to say this, I think things are going to come a lot faster at us than we're talking about 2030. I hope you're right. I hope that the real brawling doesn't start until 2030. I just think that with what has happened to America over the course of my adult life, I don't know that there's that much fight left in them as a group.
I don't know if I agree with that. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, I talk to guys like, you know, I talk to Burlingame every so often, you know, and I talk to Luongo every so often. I talk to a bunch of guys that I used to serve with. And every so often I'll talk to my soldiers. Like I had a conversation with one of my soldiers about a week ago, one of our very mutual friends, one of our, my ops officer, you know, passed away in 13, and we were talking about him. But they all say the same thing. Let's just get on with the fight. I'm tired of this. Let's deal with all these shitbags all at the same time. Let's get on with the fight. Let's remind the public who we are. Let's remind these people in Washington who we are. And then let's go kick AIPAC out of this country and call them what they are, a foreign lobby, and then throw them out. And don't let them do any more damage. And then after that, we reestablish with people that understand selfless service, and we rebuild the system from the ground up. I hear it regularly, right? I think Americans need to be reminded who the fuck they are and what we're all about and where we came from. And I hope that that happens through the realization that this sideshow that's in D.C. that's a dumpster fire is not representative and never has been. Since the end of World War, since Bretton Woods, these people have not represented us.
Right.
And it's so blatantly on display now. It's hard to turn away and say this, any of this is real. Like this theater with Marjorie Taylor Greene and the Epstein list. Okay. Release the list. You should have done. I mean, the manifest has been out there. We know Clinton, we know Bill Gates, we know a bunch of other people. We're on the plane 100 times. You're only going there for one reason. Release the rest of them. And then say to the public, all right, these guys are pedophiles. We know this for sure. Go do your thing. I mean, it'll never happen, but, you know, like, well, we could wish, right?
One of the things that I found that to at least be somewhat encouraging about the film that we made was focusing on the 56 revolution. I mean, they went for 10 years under Soviet domination. And then one day, it just blew up. I mean, you know, I mean, the groundwork had been being laid for a while, right? But then one day, everybody sort of came out. It started with students, but it spread very quickly to the working class and the middle and middle class. And the military just turned the stuff over to them, just to open the armories. And you know, and yes, after the Soviet Union brought their thousands of tanks in and took control again of Budapest, and all of Hungary eventually, yeah, that was pretty brutal. But it pointed out to the rest of the Soviet bloc the brutality that they used to put that little rebellion down sent shockwaves and signals out to the rest of them. And when the Soviets were so caught by surprise, they didn't even know what to do. That's why you have this 2 or 3 days of battle with the citizens, and then they pulled all their tanks back, or most of them back out, and then realized, well, they can't do that. So they went in, and they went in hard with thousands of tanks instead of hundreds of tanks, and retook it. But it signaled the end of the Soviet Union, because it turned a lot of those Soviet client states against Russia, and they eventually from there kept giving, you know, license down the road to all of these different things, and eventually brought the Soviet Union down. But the idea that you can be going along under all this oppression for all this time, and it takes just one spark to bring everybody together and to say no, I think that, to me, that's encouraging.
Yeah, and I think that's why I say I have more faith in the American people than I think anybody else does, because I know that there's a lot of people, average Americans, that are fed up with the shit, right? They're fed up with the criminality. They're fed up. You know, people are really fed up with is a grift. Like, yep. You know, most Americans could put up with the the nonsense in DC, the orgies, the stage show, the fact they enrich themselves, the insider trading. If these pricks would just do their job and represent the American people instead of all these lobbyists and all these, you know, special interests and foreign nations, people would be fine. It'd be like, wouldn't be a big deal. But it's like the elections, right? If the elections were really, you know, clean, and they were fair and free, and they really were, people would go along with the results no matter what they were. But the problem is everything has been so tainted by grift and this addiction to power and control. I mean, these people are just drunk with power. It's just retarded. Like, you listen to Ted Cruz talk, I'm like, you don't even live in the real fucking world. I don't know what world you live in. Like, do you wake up every morning and blow Netanyahu? My God, you don't even represent the U.S. How can you sit in front of your constituency and say you represent the country when everything you do benefits Israel? How can you say that? But, and everybody sees it now, right? The one thing about Trump coming to town, no matter what you think of him now, when he ran in 2016, he forever changed the landscape of media. Forever. Yeah. Because he would release a post on you know, a daily post that would captivate the news cycle for 24 hours. And they just kept him in the spotlight. And at the same time, he pronounced mainstream media dead. He pronounced them all fake news, killed them instantly. Right. They're just now they're just now dealing with the chemotherapy to try and resuscitate themselves. But they're all going to die eventually. And he did the same thing with papers. So it's encouraging. What's encouraging about that is the fact that America has figured out that the media is completely gaslighting them,
yep,
along with the politicians. So right now you're seeing the transition away from believing the mainstream and go along with the narrative to, wait a minute, we're hearing this over here. Is this real? Because if this is real, all that's bullshit, right? I mean, look at The View. And Marjorie Taylor Greene went on The View, and they're bullies. But they all sat there for an hour and ate shit the whole time she was sitting there. And that, to me, is a massive transition away from their power base. So that coupled with the fact that this Epstein movement, it wasn't just senators doing, it wasn't just Massey and MTG that did this. This was an overwhelming narrative from the American public that said, you're going to release the files. We've had enough. Release the files. We want to see who's in there. We don't care who it burns to the ground. And I think that's why we're seeing, you know, and Trump punted because all he had to do was declassify it and let it and release it, right? He could have told Bonnie to do it. But this is egg on his face too. And it shows you how much Susie Wiles controls the entire administration.
Exactly.
Even Dan Bondi. Because she is, you know, she's a darling of she's the darling of Big Pharma, right? She was a lobbyist for Big Pharma. And so she's hired other big, you know, big time lobbyists and put them in key positions, the FDA, et cetera. This was an end around her that was done by the American people through those two. So whatever you think about those two, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Massey, they're doing the right thing, right? Right. They're releasing the files, the American public. Trump ran on it, right? And so that's encouraging because it means people are getting louder. They're starting to say enough, do what we tell you to do or leave. Right. So you get out of the drama, you get out of the emotional side of it. I'm seeing good things. I'll just leave it there. So we're a little over an hour. Any final thoughts for the audience on the documentary or any final thoughts from either one of you before we wrap this up?
I just like the opportunity to come back when the film is ready to go and we can talk a little bit more about this and what's going on with the country at that point. We're going to do everything we can to pull the release date in to something that will allow the film to be actually shown, but also available, because 6 months is it's a long time in the current day.
That's 11 dog years. It's 11 dog years.
No, I just want to say thanks for the opportunity to talk about the film and you know how dedicated both Pete and I have been to the concepts of freedom and constantly bolstering the American people to recognize the power that they have all they have to do is say no and it's all over with.
Yep.
You know, but they keep getting distracted with all this other nonsense. And so for my part, I just thank you for the opportunity to put that out there. And if you guys get a chance to see the film, you should see it, because it has the power. It has the ability to change minds and to create some resistance. But we got to get it done and out there, and that's always a challenge. So anyway, thank you.
Awesome. Well, gents, two things before we wrap this up. I definitely like to have you guys on the roundtable, because we do a roundtable every Thursday. We're absolutely going to bring you back for when the movie comes out. We're absolutely going to do that. And I just want you to know that I start my day with Western rifle shooters every day. So I'll have my work stuff going over here and I will literally sit over here with coffee and go through the, you know, Western rifle shooters almost every morning.
That's great.
Actually. So I just know you got fans here, because I know there's a lot of fans in the audience too. So
we'll and I want to throw out to the people that are working in the background, because there are a lot of background people that are throwing stuff over. That's not a Peter thing. That's a whole bunch of team stuff. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. All right, gents, with that, we'll be back. I'll be back tomorrow night on Substack with a live show, a live chat, and then we'll be back Thursday with the roundtable. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, thank you.